Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Thursday, May 7th edition of Talkback. Peter Christian here, Mr. Nick Christensen, taking your phone calls, producing Talkback this morning. And we have two very special guests, two of our favorite guests here in the studio with us this morning, Dr. Peter Kolb, forestry specialist with MSU Extension Forestry, and Sandy Perrin, plant clinic coordinator with the Missoula County Department of Ecology and Extension. Welcome to both of you guys. How you doing?
Good morning.
Peter. Yes. Oh, good morning, Montana.
You bet. So, yes, but to all of the state of Montana, now the advice that you're giving here today is going to lots of stations all over the state. So,
well, great. I hope it's applicable with all our various climates and such that we have in Montana.
You bet. So if you are just new listening to the program, all you have to do is pick up the phone, call 406-721-1290, wherever you might live in the state of Montana. And Peter and Sandy would be more than happy to share their expertise with you. And I know that if you wouldn't mind, Dr. Kolb, first describing what you do with MSU Extension Forestry.
Well, I'm the forestry specialist, so I work with all of the county agents across Montana to address tree forestry issues, whether it's trees in your backyard or forests on your landscape, and that involves wildfires and pests and diseases and wood markets and all of those types of things.
And I will tell you that you have lots of experience with the trees in my backyard.
Well, and all across
you've climbed most of them.
Yeah. All across Montana, so I regularly get out to eastern central Montana, and it's a more windbreak, shelter belt, backyard community trees there, but certainly in western Montana, I work with a lot of forest landowners. So when you have wind blow or wildfire issues, and of course May is wildfire month, awareness month, so, you know, there's some sobering statistics about, you know, how that has evolved over time. And spring and late summer are the wildfire seasons, because spring, all that cured grass, you get some wind, you get an ignition, and it's off to the races. And, of course, late summer, drought conditions, and that's when the woody fuels really start to play a big role.
How's it looking right now out there, in especially in our part of western Montana? Is it fairly nice? I mean, we didn't have a whole lot of snow, snowpack.
Well, we got a lot of moisture. So, you know, the soil is well saturated and rehydrated. Our biggest issue is really going to be how the summer develops, because we do now have a pretty certain confirmation of what they call a super El Nino. And El Nino years means we get that dry air from California coming across Montana versus the cool, wet air from Canada coming down across Montana. The good side is we're still in a cool, wet phase of the Pacific to Kittle Oscillation. So for western Montana, that's a bit of a godsend, because just like last summer, which was predicted to be a real bad fire year, we got rain about every week or so that really moderated that effect, and that was directly due to the Pacific to Kittle Oscillation being in a cool wet phase. And we're in that again. So it's really a battle between equatorial climatic movements and patterns versus the northern Pacific movements. Now, if you're in central and eastern Montana, you get most of your moisture off the Gulf of Mexico. So entirely different weather systems affect you out there. And that's why you're luckily getting some rain now in western Montana. We got sunny skies and dry weather. So it's going to really vary depending on where the high-pressure systems park and what the major influences are for the summer.
Okay. Now, Sandy, we have about a minute to give us a ground view look of what's going on at the plant clinic.
Yeah, so right now we are just starting to, you know, we're really monitoring soil temperatures, what things you can plant in your yard and garden. Also, we trap for the codling moth, which is the wormy apple culprit. So we have caught it, but it's still way too early to spray your apple trees because they are in full bloom right now. So, but it's just a warning and indicator of how much pressure you have on your trees, or what you may have to do later on as far as the spray routine.
All right, we're just getting started now with Dr. Kolb and Sandy. We already have a caller waiting, and the phone lines are open. If you have a question or a comment about your garden or forestry or anything to do with that, give us a call at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday edition of Talkback, and we'll be right back after this quick timeout.
Hey, Boo, it's Denise. Dennis Bragg with the updated Town Square weather forecast, looking at probably the best day of the week so far on Thursday with a high near 74 degrees under mostly sunny skies. Winds will stay light early and then pick up out of the west-northwest about 5 to maybe 10 miles an hour through the afternoon. Then Thursday night, expect partly cloudy skies, a little cooler, lows around 42 degrees, but warmer than it has been the past few mornings. Friday brings partly sunny conditions, warmer with highs near 76, and increasing clouds Friday evening.
Being a family caregiver can be rewarding, but it can also be expensive. Search caregiver compensation programs at the AARP Foundation Paid for Care Hub, developed with support from United Healthcare. Visit paidforcare.aarpfoundation.org.
Hey, welcome back to Talk Back. And again, our guests here in the studio, Dr. Peter Colvin, Sandy Perrin. And we already have a caller on the line to visit with you, and it's Nancy. Nancy, good morning. You're on with Peter and Sandy. Go ahead.
Yeah, morning, Glory. And Peter and Sandy, I have a couple of questions. What is the best care for trees, yard trees, in the summer, especially in this terrible drought season that we're looking forward to? And I have a poplar. I've got some blue spruce and a honey locust, and it seems like the poplar always is a little bit more desperate for water or attention. And lilacs. I've got four lilac bushes, and one has died. Two appear to be dying. They're like in between, and no matter what I do, they continue to get dry branches and kind of brittle. And then I have a French lilac bush that does very, very well, but it's starting to show signs of maybe possibly drought conditions too. Maybe it's affecting the root system. I'm not sure, because I do water. So any suggestions on these? And thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Well, that's a pretty tall order. A lot depends on what kind of soil you have, the aspect. So are you south-facing, are you north-facing, are you flat, et cetera. So, you know, the locust and the spruce trees are fairly drought-tolerant. Lilac is also very drought-tolerant. So watering isn't as important, but if you're on cobbly gravel like some of the Missoula outwash areas are, then watering more frequently is important. But really, you have to monitor your soil. I just got a question per email, how much water should I apply per tree because I'm irrigating trees? Well, right now, you don't have to do any watering. The soil is well hydrated. So really, you want to keep a good eye on what your moisture conditions are like. And yeah, your poplars are have a high water demand. They're not a drought-tolerant species at all. And so when you start seeing wilting leaves on it, certainly that's an indicator. But also be aware that poplars will often wilt in the afternoon just when it's hot and the humidity drops down. But right now, you really shouldn't have to water until mid-July. All depends on how the summer progresses and what kind of rainfall we're going to get. And so for trees, really deep watering once or twice, once a week or once every other week is the way to go. So the question I got is, if I have an emitter at 2 gallons per hour, how long do I need to water? Well, if you have a nice silty soil that holds that water well, really once a week or once every 2 weeks, and then water for a good 8 to 10 hours. So you're getting, you know, 10 gallons of water, because you want to get that water into the deeper soil profile. Most trees will root to down to 4 feet or deeper, depending on the species. Spruce is very shallow rooted. Your honey locust will be deeper rooted. So, you know, unfortunately, the answer is always it depends a lot, but right, monitor your conditions. As far as your lilacs are concerned, lilacs will get old stems, and those will die out. They won't flower as well. So really removing the old canes and letting the newer ones come up, that's a way of maintaining your lilacs. But they're also very shade intolerant. So if you have a lot of trees and they're starting to get shaded, that's another thing you want to take a look at. And then the final thing, fertilization. Trees should really only be fertilized once a year, and that's right about now is when you want to fertilize. And without knowing your soil chemistry, so get a soil test, but if you don't, something like 10-10-10, a well-balanced fertilizer, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, where most of your lawn fertilizer is high nitrogen. That's the first number is nitrogen. So you really want to get some good phosphorus and potassium into those trees. And then don't fertilize the rest of the summer. For lilacs, Sandy is also an expert on those. So, Sandy, any other thoughts?
Yeah, so my other thought is if they're growing in a lawn area, a lot of times that grass competes with the lilacs, so they're maybe not getting enough moisture, enough fertilizer. So getting rid of that grass, maybe applying a bark mulch around the base of those lilacs, cutting off that grass would be a great idea. And like Peter said, cutting those old branches to the ground, they do sucker up from that and form a nice bush.
And the other thing is lilacs like slightly alkaline soil, you know. So in western Montana, we have more acidic soils. Central and eastern Montana, alkalinity tends to be a problem, but the lilacs handle alkaline soils pretty well. And, you know, so 7 is neutral, so the pH scale is 1 to 14. So you start getting alkaline soils if you're just a little bit above 7. 8 is pretty alkaline, ties up all the nutrients. So there's only a few trees and shrubs that handle alkalinity well, whereas in western Montana, we tend to have more conifer forest soils that tend to be a little bit more acidic in nature.
Well, here's what we're going to do. I just want folks who are outside of western Montana, who are living in eastern Montana, I want you to know that Sandy and Dr. Kolb have all sorts of knowledge that they could share with you about what's going on in your own yard and garden, depending upon where you are. We've been doing this in Missoula for quite some time, but they are very knowledgeable about the conditions throughout the state. So if you have a question about what's going on in your garden or your yard or how I can make my grass look greener or whatever it might be in your part of the state, give us a call at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Now, Sandy, we got about a minute and a half before we take a break. So when's the best time to start a garden now, or are we already past that time?
Well, you know, it's a great time to get started. You know, a lot of folks that are seasoned gardeners have been out there planting some of what we call the cold crops, which are like lettuce and spinach, onions, radishes, peas. But some of those warmer crops like our squashes, tomatoes, cucumbers, things like that, we're still going to hold for a while. We haven't got to our annual frost date. Mother Nature is very fickle these days, up and down and so forth. So we have to be cautious. And also, so with some of those things we can get started on, a lot of people are planting maybe some of their broccoli and cauliflower transplants. But, you know, I had 30 degrees yesterday morning.
Right.
So, you know, even that can really shock plants that have been recently put out that were grown in a greenhouse. So it's really good to watch those cold temperatures, maybe have some coverings or row coverings over them to help a little frost protection to help them harden off.
So you don't want to get too far ahead of the game.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly, because then you have to replant or rebuy.
Yeah, I was just at one of the bigger stores at their gardening section and noticed all their fuchsias got hammered by a frost.
Right. Yeah.
We are going to come right back. We have a break standing by, and Dave is waiting to visit with Sandy Perrin and Dr. Peter Kolb. Why don't you give us a call at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Back after this.
Planning to make it.
Welcome back to Talk Back for this Thursday, May 7th. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. Our guests in studio, Sandy Perrin, plant clinic coordinator for the Missoula County Department of Ecology and Extension, and Dr. Peter Kolb, forestry specialist. And Dave is on the line right now. Dave, good morning. You're on with Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I had heard that there had been cuts by the Trump administration to the Forest Service budget, and I'm curious if it's impacting how the Forest Service is doing their jobs, and is there layoffs in the area? I'm curious what's happening there.
Well, it's a big question, and yes, there have been significant cuts. So Forest Service really used to have three divisions. One was their research division. One was their National Forest Division, which manages the national forests. And the other was the State and Private Forestry Division. So the State and Private Forestry Division was pretty much eliminated. My program, we got some funding from that to help do education for private landowners, and that money is pretty much gone. Research Division is also being severely cut back. National Forest Division is growing through many transitions. You've probably heard that the main headquarters is moving to Salt Lake from Washington, D.C., and there will be 10 regional main offices. So a lot is being revised on the National Forest System and the Forest Service. Time will tell whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, as a federal institution, it had gotten pretty used to getting an awful lot of money every year. Firefighting is being moved in, or has been moved into its own arena under the Department of Interior. Forest Service, of course, was under the Department of Agriculture. So a lot of changes, some of which, or certainly some reforms, in my opinion, were quite necessary. But there's going to be a lot of growing pains in doing all of this, and myself included. Like I said, one of our main programs with the Forest Stewardship Program lost most of its funding to do. So this was a three-day workshop offered in different areas that helped landowners assess their forest land and develop a forest management plan and wildfire hazard reduction, all of that. So how we're going to fund that, we don't know at this point in time, and we're losing our coordinator for all of that. But so the answer is I don't know. Certainly there's an awful lot less money available, and the priorities are changing quite a bit. And again, I just say this is going to have to work itself out like any major reform to a federal agency. And those that worked in that agency, of course, don't like it because they worked hard and they liked the system that was there. But we got to give it a chance to meet the needs. And how well they listen and how well they meet the needs is going to be determined over the next couple of years.
All right. Now that we're statewide, we're getting a lot more phone calls in from different parts of the state. And Al is waiting with a call from Bozeman. So looking forward to that as well. Yeah, Nick's on the line with another caller right now. So we're keeping Nick really busy with this. This is great. And again, our guests here in the studio, Dr. Peter Kolb, who's the forestry specialist with MSU Extension Forestry, and Sandy Perrin is the plant clinic coordinator with the Missoula County Department of Ecology and Extension. And Al is waiting on the line right now. Al, good morning. You're on with Peter and Sandy. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to ask a simple question. How many more wars are we going to have to fight in the Middle East? Who's going to pay for them? Are we ever going to get repaid for them? And why do the news media think we're so imbecilic
That's,
that we can't what's going on?
Thank you for the call. This is not that kind of show today. We're talking about plants and flowers and trees, so there you go. All right, I believe we have Kevin standing by. Kevin, good morning. You're on Talkback. Go ahead.
Yes, I've heard that when I'm planting a tree in my backyard, that once I've dug the hole and I'm and I put the tree in the hole, that I should backfill it only with the soil that came from that hole, because I want to encourage the roots to keep growing outward so the tree can get bigger and bigger. That if I add anything to the soil, that it will encourage the trees to stick around and the tree will not get any bigger. What do you think about that?
Great. Thanks for the call. We've got about 2 minutes.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. Really, you got to look at what kind of soil you have. So if you have a poor soil, high clay, or very gravelly soil, so when you dig a hole, you don't want it any deeper than the root ball of the tree, okay, because that soil is going to settle. But you can make it a lot wider. So if you have high clay content or high gravel content, digging a hole a lot wider and amending that soil with a good organic component, so at least 10% organic, not more than 20% organic, amending that soil will really encourage the roots to expand out of that root ball. A transplanted tree has a very diminished root system, less than 50% of what it naturally would have. So we want to encourage good lateral root growth on that transplanted tree the first several years. And roots will grow where the goodies are. So if you amend that soil and make it a better soil, better water holding capacity, better nutrient loading, so those lateral roots grow out, then that root system can control more soil, has a greater access to water, greater access to nutrients, and it'll grow a lot better. If you just plunk it into a little hole, especially if it's a clay or gravelly soil, those roots won't expand and the tree will not grow well.
Now, when you first plant a tree, how much water should you do? We got about a minute.
Well, you want to be planting now, or actually the last month was the best time. Trees are already leafing out, so once they've leafed out, it's a little tougher to transplant them because they're putting less energy into root growth and more into leaf growth. But you want to plant when the soil is already moist. So really watering isn't that necessary if things are nice and moist. Watering is useful at rights when you planted that, because we call it watering in a tree. That will help move soil particles, fill in voids, make better root contact with those soil particles. So watering right after planting is good. And then as things dry out, because it has a small root system, you want to keep the tree hydrated the first several years.
We're going to come right back, get more from Peter and Sandy after this quick time out. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us.
Dennis Bragg with the updated Town Square weather forecast, looking at probably the best day of the week so far on Thursday, with a high near 74 degrees under mostly sunny skies. Winds will stay light early and then pick up out of the west northwest about 5 to maybe 10 miles an hour through the afternoon. Then Thursday night, expect partly cloudy skies, a little cooler, lows around 42 degrees, but warmer than it has been the past few mornings. Friday brings partly sunny conditions, warmer with highs near 76, and increasing clouds Friday evening.
There's an old saying. The only true wisdom is knowing that you know nothing. But when it comes to COPD, knowing the signs can mean the difference between life and death. COPD is a chronic lung disease that may be caused by genetics, frequent lung infections, or irritants like smoke, fumes, dust, or chemicals. The most common cause of COPD is cigarette smoke, but anyone can get COPD. Despite being the third leading cause of death worldwide, millions of people have COPD symptoms but still go undiagnosed. Wisdom might come with aging, but symptoms like shortness of breath, tightness in your chest, coughing, and wheezing shouldn't. If you find yourself struggling to keep up with other people your age, or if you get short of breath walking up the stairs, it's time to talk to your doctor. COPD does not yet have a cure, but it is treatable. Early diagnosis and proper care can add years of better breathing to your life. For more information, visit copdfoundation.org.
Welcome back, everybody. Good to have you along on this edition of Talk Back. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen, producing Talk Back, taking your phone calls. And, of course, Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Parent are here to give their advice on plants and trees. And Karen is waiting. Karen, good morning. What's on your mind?
Welcome back, everybody. Good to have you along on this.
Hello, Karen.
Hi.
Hi, Karen. You're on. Go ahead.
Good morning. I have two questions. The first one is about bees. I live in a lower rattlesnake, and I walk my dog all the time. I also have a bunch of plum trees and other fruit trees in my backyard, and I have not seen a single bee on my trees or any in the neighborhood. And so I'm very concerned that I won't have any fruit this year. Is that a widespread issue, or am I just looking for them at the wrong time?
In our gardens at Rocky Mountain Gardens, a lot of the earlier blossoming trees, like some of the plums, the apricots and peaches, were definitely frosted. So it wasn't a pollination thing. But I was just out checking yesterday. Some of the later blossoms on my plum tree there have been pollinized. So, yes, I do see a few. I can't say I've seen tons. But, you know, there's other things like bumblebees, a lot of the native bees that do pollination. So I don't think we have a major worry. I'm more concerned about our frost potential that did damage, and even damaging blossoms that hadn't opened. We were dissecting some apple blossoms at some local orchards last week and looking into those. And some of those early blossoms definitely had brown centers. So they had been froze, because we were down in the bitterroot. They were down into low 20s. We were about 25, 26 in Missoula. So that definitely can do some damage to fruit blossoms. So it doesn't always have to do with the insects that pollinate them. It has to do with our weather temperatures.
But, you know, I'd just throw in there, so we live at 4,100 feet up north of Missoula, and I've been seeing lots of bumblebees. I have not been seeing a lot of honeybees, and we got to be cognizant. A lot of honeybees are overwinter in Arizona and places, and I'm not aware if they've brought them up to Montana yet or not.
I'm not either.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I guess I can just wait and see. I keep checking to see if there's any fruit coming, but it's kind of early. The petals have just fallen off, so it might be too early to see. But I just don't recall a time when I couldn't go out there and see bees. So,
well, you know, and we are early this year. You know, we are about 2 weeks early, still ahead of schedule from what we typically see bloom time. So, you know, that's why, like Peter said, we're not aware if the bees have been transported back up from their winter hideouts.
Let's try to get another caller on. This is Jeff. Jeff, good morning. You're on Talkback with Peter and Sandy. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Peter. Good morning, Sandy. Good morning, Montana. Dr. Kolb, with your discussion about cuts, does this affect your mini college at all? And you might want to explain to the rest of the state exactly what goes on with your mini college in Missoula every March. And Sandy, you might want to do a little bragging on your butterfly house. I don't know how many people around the state know about that.
It's amazing, and, trust me.
Well, answer. So most university programs are funded through a variety of different sources.
Thanks, Jeff.
So we get some funding from the state. We get a lot of money from different grants, federal grants, et cetera. Forest Service historically has given us educational money to do programs like the stewardship program. So when those funding sources disappear, and my program alone, we have several different sources that we get funds from. And we have to apply for them with grants and updates and show results and all of those types of things. So when there are major cuts, like the Forest Service, that will have a major impact on our program without a doubt. And we're still kind of trying to figure out how we're going to make up for that big budget deficit. We certainly plan on continuing to do the mini college, which is a spring workshop for landowners that we offer at the university. And participate with others. So we have a landowner workshop, a conference coming up in Helena that's funded by the Forest Stewardship Foundation and a lot of other volunteers. So like any university program, we have to roll the punches and we have to show that we're productive. And it's a little frustrating because we have been very productive, but a lot of other states have not used that money as well as I would say we have. So when a federal budget is evaluated, it's evaluated across all the states. And even if Montana's doing a great job, if most other states aren't, we suffer the impact. Sandy?
Yeah, so I would love to take credit for the Missoula Butterfly House and Insectarium. They are a private partner in our building. Our building is a Missoula County building as well. The Extension Office is a part of that and Department of Ecology. They do a fabulous job. It's such a great partner in our building and spectacular.
Kids love them.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. We partner a lot in our programs together.
We're going to come right back. 721-1290 is our number. Rick and Jerry are both standing by to talk with Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin on this Thursday edition of Talkback. So please stay with us. And phone lines are open.
Hello, this is Patty.
The more you listen to your kids, the closer you'll be. Find resources to help you support your kids and their emotional well-being at soundedouttogether.org. That's soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Pivotal.
Women experience unique life stages such as pregnancy or menopause that can increase their risk of developing cardiovascular disease over the course of their lifetime.
But here's the good news. Women have the best resource. We have each other.
Visit goredforwomen.org today to learn more.
Welcome back to Talk Back. Good to have you along this morning on this Thursday, May 7th. Our special guests in studio, Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin. And Rick has been waiting the longest. Rick, good morning. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. Hey, I have like 55 roses in my backyard. It's become a little ridiculous for me, but I really enjoy them. When I plant a rose, I dig a hole, and I'm wondering if I'm overthinking this whole process. I put 3-year-old straw in the bottom of the hole, I put worm casings and a handful of alfalfa pellets. When I cover it, I do the same process on top. I put the straw on top. I put the alfalfa casings or the worm casings, and I put the alfalfa pellets. Am I overthinking this process? And another question is, I have a rose. It's very, very healthy. One long stem, and at the top, it's got all kinds of greenery. When I pruned it this year, I took all the dead and dying wood off, so on and so forth. But it's about 4 feet tall, and it looks like a standard rose. I've created a standard rose without knowing it. Can you tell me if I've maybe done that, since it has no limbs coming from like the base up to about 4 feet, and then the top will almost look like a lollipop. I'll listen to your answers.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Well, it'd be really interesting to know, is this a hybrid tea, floribunda, shrub rose? I'm assuming it's not a shrub rose.
No, it's not a shrub rose. It's not a climbing rose at all. It actually is a floribunda.
Okay. Yeah, typically they will sprout from the base. So I usually grafted roses are what they call like on a standard. They're grafted at the top where you have that bare stem. So I would assume this one is not that way if you bought it as a floribunda rose.
Well, and if you get sprouts off of that, the sprouting is from the root stock. It's not going to be the grafted rose. So
it should come above that graft if it's because they are grafted. So you should get some sprouts from that. But I think I'd be a little cautious to wait and see. We've got a lot of growing time left.
Yeah, and sometimes the grafted part will freeze out, and the rootstock will survive. And so what you're going to end up is maybe a bush rose or something like that. So it's just like grafted fruit trees, okay? So most of our fruit trees are also grafted, and you'll get a lot of suckering from the root system that does not produce the fruit that you want. It's more of an aggressive root system, and that, for apples, that's usually ends up a crab apple type of fruit. And flowers, rose is the same. So I've had grafted roses where I got a lot of root suckering that were not the grafted rose. Go ahead.
I do have a standard rose, and it's doing well. It's kind of a pain to take care of, especially to winterize. But I was just wondering if I accidentally did something. The rose that I previously mentioned is extremely healthy. It's very, very healthy. And I was just wondering if I made a mistake and turned it into something that I didn't necessarily want. I really love the alfalfa pellets for fertilizer.
Yeah, if your roses are doing good, you obviously have been doing this practice for a while. If they're healthy and thriving, it's obviously working. It's hard to know all that nutrient balance and to know your soils and how it's retained. But if your roses are healthy and thriving, don't worry about what you're doing. Obviously, it's working out well.
And, for the rest of the listeners, so the straw will add texture to the soil, mainly water movement. Straw has no nutrients in it. It's just cellulose and some lignin in there. The alfalfa pellets are very high in nitrogen, so that's basically a nitrogen source for them. And the worm casings, that's where you're getting more of a balanced a nutrient loading, but it depends on what kind of soil you're actually working with. So if you have a nice silty loam soil, you may not have to do that. If you have a gravelly soil or a sandy soil or a high clay soil, then all the things you're doing is helping those roses, obviously. But usually adding raw biomass is not the best idea because it takes microbes a while to break those things down, and they may actually rob their surrounding soil of nutrients while it's breaking down. So composting, taking everything you took and composting it first for a year or two and then adding it would generally be a more recommended practice than adding raw straw and alfalfa pellets.
Well, the straw is actually three to 4 years old. Okay. And so it's pretty much, it's almost like a moss when I put it in. It's not, it's very sticky.
Right.
And so I'm wondering, am I just doing an overkill?
Well, if your roses are doing well, no. I mean, so the proof is
if it's working, why not? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I have a Queen Elizabeth rose right now. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I got it drooped over a pergola, and it's about 16 feet long. I have nowhere else to grow it to. So, can I trim those ends back, the end of that Queen Elizabeth back during the summertime, or should I not touch it at all?
Oh, I'd be doing it right now. prune it back now.
Okay, well, I did prune it back, and it's just growing unbelievable. So, all my roses are growing run, but this is the best year I've ever seen for roses, I think, mainly because of the mild winter. Anyway, certainly. Thank you.
He has an embarrassment of riches going on. Yeah,
absolutely. Gosh, I'd love a bouquet of roses from him, it sounds like.
Well, but again, you know, a lot of this is very site-specific, so if it's working for you, then, don't change what you're doing. So
we just, and that, a lot of roses, it may be a lot of work, but if you're still able to do that and it gives you that much enjoyment and you're getting the results, why change at this point? There are many different ways of taking care of roses and fertilization, but if it's working for you, great.
You bet. We're coming up against a quick break. And Jerry, if you don't mind holding just a minute, we'd appreciate it. I want to give you plenty of time to get your question answered. And again, our guests here in the studio, Dr. Peter Kolb, forestry specialist with MSU Extension Forestry. And of course, Sandy Perrin, who's a plant clinic coordinator with the Missoula County Department of Ecology and Extension. So if you have a question about what's going on your yard and garden, what to plant, where to plant it, is it the right time, whatever, please feel free to give us a call right now at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And, of course, they'll be with us all the way till 10 o'clock this morning. So if you have to wait till the 9 o'clock hour, that's fine, too. So, again, it's 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. We'll be right back. Treat. Hey, welcome back to Talk Back. 721-1290 is the number. I'm Peter Christian. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. Our guests here in the studio, Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin, and Jerry has been waiting very patiently through the break. Jerry, good morning. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you for this opportunity. I live at the south end of the university district, and I've got an apple tree in the back that just has a bumper crop of blossoms on it and visited with bees on it. Last year, I had a very, very poor crop of apples with lots of bugs and worms and that. And I'm wondering, what is the best time to kind of spray an apple tree without hurting the bees and that? Can you help me out there?
You bet. So I actually trap for the codling moth, which is the wormy apple culprit. How I have caught them, but it's way too early. We never spray when a tree's in bloom. There's actually a formula that I follow that tracks degree days, and when it gets to a certain amount of degree days, I say it's time to spray. I have a recorded message on a phone at work that's called my pest alert hotline that leads you right up to when to spray, your options of what to spray with, whether you're doing organic or inorganic sprays. That number is 406-258-3820. It's also on our website too, whatever I talk about during that talk. So typically the prediction model right now based on weather averages is showing me toward the end of May, but it's all weather dependent when we start spraying. And then you need to continue to spray depending on the product you use. There's the different intervals of how long that spray is effective for. So whatever you choose, you follow that schedule, and you're going to spray clear to probably be mid to late August, depending on the species of apple.
Wow. Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you. Thank you for the call. Let's get Nancy on. Nancy, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Peter, it's Nancy. We're on?
Yes. Go ahead, Nancy. You're on with Peter and Sandy.
All right. Peter and Sandy. Okay, before I ask a question, I got to tell you that I enjoyed the Ngata Davida by the Iron Butterfly. I mean, we're going way back in times there, Peter.
Amen.
But, But anyway, you might as well play some Frank Zappa, too. But I got to tell you, I have a small flock of chickens, and sometimes I'll make a homemade fertilizer out of some of their pooty-poo, about a half of a cup of their pooty-poo, and a gallon jug of water, and I'll shake it, and I'll let it ferment a couple of days, and it's very good for plants, indoor and out. Do you have any other home recipes for fertilizer since a lot of people are being economically hit during this this embargo in Iran? Any ideas or suggestions for homemade fertilizers? And thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Well, it's pretty hard to beat chicken droppings for fertilizer. Very high.
I like pooty poo. It's a great expression. But go ahead. It's all right.
Well, I wasn't sure whether that was a coffee at a place or what. But it's very high in phosphorus and nitrogen. You know, it can be really hot. You know, so you got to be careful about over applying it in your garden. But yeah, I tend to compost it, put in a compost, or you know, and as was it Nancy said, you know, she uses a cup and mixes it with a gallon of water, which is, I admire her fortitude. It's a pretty stinky mixture at that point in time. Most ungulate, so cow manure, horse manure, again, good stuff, but you really want to compost it, especially horse manure is really good at spreading weed seeds out because they don't chew their cud and break down the seeds more as much as cows do. But any kind of organic waste material, it's always good to compost and let the microbes go to work on them first to kill the things that you don't want in there. Sandy?
Yeah, the other thing I would possibly say is if you're in a garden situation is to do cover cropping. There's a lot of different green manure products. I mean, you can use annual rye, you can use some clovers that don't overwinter, and tilling that in gives your soil a real good nutrient boost as well.
Now, we're getting into the time now. Everybody's starting to water their lawns. If you wouldn't mind just telling us the proper times and the amount of water we should be using at this time of year.
Well, it's kind of a variable. Certainly, again, it depends on your soils. You know, like Peter said, if you have a real sandy or rocky soil, grass roots are pretty shallow. They're anywhere from typically 2 to 4 inches. And so, you know, if you're in a real rocky or sandy soil, really a exposed site, you may need to start watering now. And typically you're putting on somewhere in the neighborhood of about an inch a week.
Okay.
And you want to split that up into several times of watering.
So if you've got one of those zone things for your yard, and you can set the amount of time, how should we do that?
Yeah, so you want to take a shallow dish out there, like an 8-ounce container of some sort that's a flat bowl, and run your sprinklers, say, for 10, 20 minutes and measure how much water that is. So then you'll know that you need to get that, so you're putting a half inch out at a time.
All right. And with that, we're coming up against the top of the hour. Now, if you have a question or comment, if you've been listening and saying, hey, I've got a tree or a shrub or a rose or whatever, and I'd love to have some good advice from these people. And these are the experts, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Kolb and Sandy are with us a couple times a month, and they are here to answer your questions. So if you have a question about your trees, Dr. Peter Kolb is a forestry specialist with MSU Extension Forestry, and Sandy Perrin is the plant clinic coordinator with the Missoula County Department of Ecology and Extension. So we're looking forward to getting your calls in the next hour at 406-721-1290 or 1- Hey, welcome back to Talk Back, everybody. Good to have you along on this Thursday, May 7th. We're delighted once again to have Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin here in the studio with us, talking about plants and trees and everything to do with what's going on and growing in Montana. And Lisa has been waiting. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, we have a new audience now.
Oh, yes, please.
They've never heard from Sandy or Dr. Kolb before, so I wanted to take the time for them to kind of introduce themselves. And
absolutely.
Maybe start ladies first with Sandy, if you want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in Missoula County, we are lucky to have the only fully staffed plant clinic in Montana. So people can bring me in all kinds of samples of questions about their plant. What is their plant? What's wrong with my plant? We also provide information on soil testing and help you interpret those soil tests. Anything in a horticulture related, vertebrate pest as well, because we get a lot of those in our landscapes.
So, and yeah, good morning, Montana. So I'm Peter Kolb. I'm the MSU Extension Forestry Specialist. So I work with all the county extension offices across the state. So Western Montana, a little bit more focused on forests, certainly some of that in central and southeastern Montana, but also do a lot of windbreaks, shelter belts, backyard tree issues all across the state of Montana. Lucky to be able to travel across our beautiful state and see all of the very unique and beautiful places in the state.
And of course, the reason they're both here is to answer your questions. And again, Lisa has been waiting through the break. So Lisa, good morning. You're on with Dr. Kolb and Sandy Parent. Go ahead, please.
Am I on?
Yes, ma'am. You go right ahead, please.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Peter and Sandy. I have already gotten a couple of my questions answered by listening, but I have a suggestion for Sandy that called in about home manure type for her plants. And I have used this for years, and it has not, it's not my invention. It's not really an invention, but it was not my suggestion. I heard it from a big garden person on TV, and I've used that for many years, and it's just a wonderful way to keep your plants, and especially flowering plants over the winter, as well as your new little plants in the summertime. And what it is, I eat a banana every morning. I put the peeling into a bucket, an old bucket, and then whenever I make some eggs, the eggshells go right in with it, and you have about 1/4 of the bucket full of peelings and eggshells, and then you add about a good half of water, maybe 3/4 of water to this mixture. And then you let it sit for maybe a couple of weeks at the most, and you can tell the water is coloring and it starts to smell. And in the summertime, I leave it outside. And then I go once a week, I'll take a little container and put it over my young tomato plants, over my geraniums, and not necessarily over the trees, of course. And it is an amazing manure-type water, and it doesn't hurt the plants at all. And anybody can make it.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. So,
well,
please.
I'll just add, I've been to Lisa's.
Are you on?
Yes, yeah,
we're still on. I've been to Lisa's yard and garden, and she has an absolutely beautiful place and just beautiful flowers, immaculate yard and garden. So, and that banana peels are high in potassium, eggshells high in calcium. So, you know, those secondary, especially potassium, phosphorus, and calcium are really good for plant defenses and vibrancy of flowers, I understand, too. Is that?
Yeah, so that's a great. I've heard of that type of compost tea a lot. It works well.
All right. And again, Lisa, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. All the other phone lines are open, by the way, across the state, 721-406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Again, if you just joined us, Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin are with us to talk about forestry and, of course, your own yard and garden and what's going on there. So please feel free to give us a call right now.
Cold and flu season.
Dennis Bragg with the updated Town Square weather forecast, looking at probably the best day of the week so far on Thursday with a high near 74 degrees under mostly sunny skies. Winds will stay light early and then pick up out of the west-northwest about 5 to maybe 10 miles an hour through the afternoon. Then Thursday night, expect partly cloudy skies, a little cooler, lows around 42 degrees, but warmer than it has been the past few mornings. Friday brings partly sunny conditions, warmer with highs near 76, and increasing clouds Friday evening.
Elena had another asthma attack. She's really sad to miss school again.
Asthma can be triggered by allergens from common pests.
I just can't shake this fever.
Mosquito bites can cause West Nile and Zika virus infections.
Sorry, boss. I'm going to be out of work for a while.
The CDC estimates that more than 300,000 Lyme disease cases spread by ticks occur in the U.S. each year. Don't let pests force you to take a sick day. Learn how to protect your family at pestworld.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association and the CDC.
Welcome back. This is Talk Back. Glad to have you along on this Thursday, May 7th. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen taking your phone calls, and Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin here in the studio to answer your questions about yards, gardens, and all things that are growing. And Charlie is up next. Charlie, good morning. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, I got two questions, if that's okay. I have amaryllis that I have in my house, and about 2 or 3 years ago, it was getting, like, 4 blossoms on it. And a friend of mine said that if I clipped off, I think it was the stamen, but I can't remember, one or the other, on the inside of the flower, that they would last longer, which they did last longer, but now I don't get any at all. It doesn't flower. Did I effectively kill it, like, sterilize it?
No, that had nothing to do with it. So an amaryllis has to have a resting period. So once that flower dies, you let the leaves grow for a little bit. You should be fertilizing it, trying to energize that bulb. Then typically sometime in October, you quit watering, you let the leaves die, you let the bulb go dormant. Then you bring it back up in December, typically somewhere in there, repot it or pot it up again and let it start to grow. And that's when it will develop again another flower. But a lot of amaryllis these days, and I have several that I've had for many years. Some are reliable, and others do not seem to come back. So they're really forced for that initial bloom. A lot of people don't hold them over and want to go through that process.
Okay. And then my second question is, how do tulips propagate?
They divide. The bulbs divide.
Okay, because I got one with really pretty flower on it. So when is the best time to, like, dig it up and divide it?
Typically, when the foliage dies back down, you don't want to cut that foliage off. You want to let it die naturally. That's what energizes the bulbs. And typically, you're looking, depending on the type of tulip, not all of them divide really easily or multiply. Some are just really, like the parrot types are really bred for just that initial boom. And then they don't do, you know, they don't divide as much. But usually, typically, somewhere time in more like August or September, you dig up those bulbs, divide them, and spread them apart.
Okay, would I rebury them then? Or
yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. All right, good enough. All okay. Right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Bye. Oh, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Dr. Kolb. Oh, I thought you. Yeah. All right, the phone lines are open, by the way, if you have a question or a comment for Sandy and Dr. Kolb. And the number is 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And we're, of course, broadcasting all over the state now. So if you live in eastern Montana, southwest Montana, wherever you're hearing this program, that Dr. Kolb and Sandy can help you if you have a question or a comment with whatever's going on in your yard or garden or your forest, for that matter. So there you go. All right, so Dr. Kolb, tell us a little bit more about what you do for folks who may, again, be joining us for the first time.
Well, I mean, part of my program, we help landowners assess their forest land and develop a forest management plan. Fire hazard reduction is something that we focus on as well. We don't do the work, but so we're more of an educational entity. We partner with the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation and conservation organizations, et cetera, to help the actual work get done. So, I mean, this is Wildfire Awareness Month as well, and predictions are for a pretty hot, dry summer. So now is the time to be doing your fuel hazard reduction work, and, you know, there's a lot of information out there about what's called hardening your home. And kind of the way I describe it is in the good old days, you had the wooden matches. We called them farmer's matches where I grew up, and I just heard some people tell me they'd never heard of that before, but the self-igniting matches. So when you have a wildfire, you know, the biggest rate of spread from wildfires is embers blowing ahead of the fire. And so that can start fires a mile or more ahead of where the actual fire is. So that ember storm is more responsible for setting houses on fire than anything else. And so if you can light a match, please don't do this, but hypothetically, on a hot, dry day in the middle of summer when everything's dried out, if you can light a match and drop it on something, and it will ignite a fire, like a pile of needles in your corner, dried grass, etc., that will start a fire on your house. So hardening your home is to prevent those embers from starting an ignition on your home. And then we have like the 30-foot rule and the 100-foot rule around your house. 30-foot green and wet, so that fire can't move to your house via conduction, or burning grass will burn right up to your house, and that flame can start your house on fire.
Right.
And the 100-foot rule is there because studies have shown that even if you have 300-foot flames, the radiation from those flames at 100 feet usually doesn't project enough heat to start normal house siding on fire. So that 100-foot zone where you don't support a big flames and things like that. Now, forests are also part of that. You know, even if it's more than 100 feet from your house, that's a source of burning embers. And if you have a wind, of course, all the bets are off. So when you have 30 mile per hour wind or more, then that combines convection and embers and conduction. All that heat is being focused like a blowtorch. And so those 100-foot rules, 30-foot rules don't apply there anymore. So be looking at your forest. We had a lot of wind. We had a late, wet, heavy snowstorm. So a lot of trees have fallen over, broken off.
Right.
Those are going to become breeding grounds for bark beetles that can then emerge from those damaged trees and attack live trees later in the summer when they're water stressed. So forest management is a lifetime occupation. If you own forested land, you never quit. I mean, we had a windstorm on my property. We had over 100 trees come down.
Wow.
And I've been working hard to get that cleaned up. So cut short pieces, stack so the wood dries out so the beetles can't breed in it as well. Reduce the fire hazard. That has to be done now because when we get into high drought in the summer, you don't want to be running a chainsaw out there and doing the work then. So it's nice out now. It's not too hot and cool. So now's the time to be doing it.
Do you use that for firewood?
Oh, well, yeah, we heat entirely our house with wood. So yeah, firewood is a very important component. But dried out grasses and fine fuels usually are the main culprit of fires moving quickly across the landscape, especially if you're in central and eastern Montana. So this is also a year where targeted grazing might be very effective. So you want to get that grass down in that protection zone around your home before it cures out. It's most nutritious now for your livestock and all of that. So maybe grazing a little heavier than normal in that fire-prone area around your home would be a useful tactic.
We're going to come right back. 721-1290 is our number, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5300. Now we'll get Alan's call when we come back right after this quick timeout. Thanks for joining us on Talk Back.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. With the arrival of warmer weather, Governor Gianforte and state officials reminding Montanans they need to brace for what looks to be a robust wildfire season. The governor has officially proclaimed May as Wildfire Awareness Month, urging residents to prepare their homes and families before smoke fills the air. The Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation reports that seasonal firefighter hiring is nearly finished and crews are already responding to early season starts across the state. DNRC Director Amanda Castor says that while state and federal partners are ready with new aviation resources and equipment, wildfire preparedness is a shared responsibility. Officials suggest taking four key steps this month: hardening your home by clearing dead vegetation, creating a family evacuation plan, building a go bag with essential supplies, and signing up for local emergency alerts. The DNRC and many local fire departments and prevention groups offer free home wildfire risk assessments to help property owners reduce their vulnerability. For more information on how to protect your property and find local resources, you can visit the DNRC website. A 71-year-old Texas man is heading to 5 years of probation and has to pay over $77,000 in restitution for his role in a massive wildlife trafficking ring. But at last word, the man accused of being the shooter that killed thousands of birds remains on the run. John Patrick Butler, sentenced in Missoula federal court after pleading guilty to purchasing illegally killed bald and golden eagles. But the scope scope of this case goes far beyond one buyer. Federal investigators say Butler was part of a killing spree led by co-defendants who hunted birds up on the Flathead Indian Reservation. In total, authorities estimate a staggering 3,600 birds, including those eagles, were slaughtered to fuel a black market for feathers and parts. Prosecutors say Simon Paul, originally from St. Ignatius, is still under an arrest warrant issued in December of 2023, with investigators saying he may have fled to Canada. This is the Montana State News Network.
Enough already.
We can do more.
Enough already. We can find a cure.
Enough already.
We can do better for our kids.
Enough already. We are relying on you.
We can come together to support Children's Cancer Research Fund, a national nonprofit dedicated to ending childhood cancer that is on the front line of breakthroughs. Because
it's enough already.
Go to childrenscancer.org today.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Welcome back to the Thursday, May 7th edition of Talk Back. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. And we have Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin here to answer your questions about yards, gardens, and forests. And Alan is waiting through the break. Alan, good morning.
Good morning. Couple questions. Is it too late to prune my apple tree? And from those prunings, can I root new apple trees?
It's not ideal. I mean, you can prune anytime, so you can still prune right now. Just be really careful because the twigs, the inner bark is dividing. So any kind of pressure, bumping, ladders, friction against it, you can cause some damage to your stems. I don't think I've tried it, but rooting fruit trees is very, very difficult, even with rooting hormone. Okay. So I've never had any success unless I use some really strong hormones and more of a lab test tube type of clonal device. But no, it's not reasonable to try and it's not effective to try and root your cuttings.
Okay.
And once they've leafed out, you know, even if you're doing poplars or willows or things, once they've leafed out, they won't root very well at all.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks. Go ahead.
I would also recommend using some pruning paint on your cuttings right now, too. That will just kind of slow down any kind of fungal growth because they're going to bleed, and they're going to bleed sugar right now. And that's very, very good for fungi and things like that to grow on. So the pruning paint will reduce that somewhat and reduce any issue of fungal pathogens spreading to those pruning cuts.
Well, the phone lines are open. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Please, go ahead.
When would be the best time to prune next year?
Usually March, you know, about a month before the trees leaf out. And the whole concept is you don't want that cut to freeze dry any longer than necessary. So you want to prune when the tree is starting to become active but is not producing leaves yet. Because once they go into leaf growth phase, that's where they put all their energy. And if you prune before that, those cuts will tend to seal off and heal a lot quicker than pruning right now.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the call, sir. We appreciate that. Yeah, and this is the kind of advice you'll get with Dr. Kolb and Sandy. The phone lines are open all over the state of Montana. You're listening to Talk Back. You can get your questions answered by calling 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. So as we're getting into gardening season, like I said, my neighbor has just plowed up his garden spot and is enriching the soil right now, and he always grows a great garden. So is that where we should be right now?
There are a lot of times some people, because of if they're planting a lot of cold crops, have already done that. Typically, once you've tilled or enriched your garden, you want to give it about 2 weeks before you start to plant things so the nutrients become available to the plant material. So a lot of it, you know, maybe somebody started earlier, but it just depends on what you grow. But also, you know, like all of our warm season crops, tomatoes, squash, peppers, it's too early to put those out. We certainly could suffer another freeze. Our typically last frost date here in the Missoula area is somewhere around May 19th.
So how, so for people who maybe just moved here or have been, maybe just got a new house and they really would love to have a garden, how can we learn how to do this?
Well, there's, certainly we have a lot of what we call Mont guides put out by MSU Extension that can I grow that here gives you a lot of great advice. Also within our office, we offer a Master Gardener program, which is a, like an 8-week class that leads you through all the different aspects of gardening, diseases, insects, soil testing, plant material, botany. And then we have another program that was just piloted this year by our MSU Extension horticulturist called Gardening in Montana. So it's a once a month class, and she has a noontime slot and a 6 o'clock class, and there's a different subject about gardening every month.
And I would imagine that once somebody gets into this, it becomes like a lifelong pursuit, right?
It can be. So, yeah. You know, their master gardeners do have to take a test. There is, you know, pass the certification, do volunteer hours in the community, help, you know, promote the program, answer questions. They're at farmers markets. They do pop-up events of plant clinics in different communities around Missoula as well.
And I'd add, you don't have to do those things. So every county does a master. The Master Gardener program is a statewide thing run through the Extension Service. And you can get in as involved or as little involved as you want to. So if you want to be certified, you know, then you can go on to do all those things. But just if you're attending the Master Gardener classes doesn't mean you have to take a test.
Correct.
And you have to volunteer your time and all those things.
Exactly.
All right. So for folks who, again, this is early May. So is it a little bit early to start thinking about planting, you know, fruits and vegetables, things like that, or what? Or what are those seasons?
Yeah. So a lot of fruit trees come in dormant or bare root. And a lot of those are needing, if you do purchase those need to go in as soon as possible. But, you know, a lot of trees are container grown, so we can, you know, still have a little bit of time to easily get those in. When we get into the heat of the summer, the heat is so demanding, sometimes it's very hard to get that tree acclimated without a lot of constant care. So, I mean, it can work, but it's a lot more tricky in that environment. So the earlier you can get out there and start getting those trees selected and in the ground is better.
Ideally, you want them before they leaf out, but you can still, I mean, you still have a month in which you can plant those trees. They're just going to be a little more sensitive at this point in time. So keep monitor the soil, keep them hydrated. And the later in the season, if you plant in the midsummer, those trees might come from somewhere else. They're going to have a hard time hardening off this fall, so they're more susceptible to frost damage.
We're going to come right back with more with Dr. Kolb and Sandy here on TalkBack right after this quick timeout. TalkBackers.
Data shows that after a child turns 9 in foster care, they are much less likely to be adopted. But the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption believes every child is adoptable.
Families, if you're able to let your hair down a little bit, there's a lot to learn from teenagers.
The clock is ticking for teens at risk of aging out of foster care. Learn how you can help at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished. And with your help, together we can end hunger. Join the movement at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, welcome back to Talk Back. Peter Christian here. Nick Christensen is taking your phone calls, producing Talk Back. And joining us here in the studio, Sandy Perrin and Dr. Peter Kolb. And we have right on John from Los Angeles. John, good morning. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead, sir. What's on your mind?
First I call in, and thanks a lot, Nancy, for calling on and from Roundup and everything. Keep it up. Since Iran and fertilizer prices crisis, will algae as a fertilizer benefit potato farming? And Brian Massard of Reminis Angus, he mentions that it really is helping their the beef production, but will it help benefit potato farming? And will they stop blocking forests from us being able to go, harvest firewood and remove length restrictions?
All right, thank you for the call, Dr. Kolbe. It's probably up your alley there.
Well, I don't know about the potato thing, but yeah. As far as federal lands, Bureau of Land Management and Forest Service, you've always been able to cut firewood, which is dead trees. And the length restriction of 6 feet is there because some people use that as a means of cutting trees and turning them into commercial products. And that's not the philosophy behind the firewood cutting permits. So to my knowledge, nothing in the firewood permit cutting firewood cutting permit system has changed at all in the Forest Service. Those are available at a pretty low cost for people to go out and cut their own firewood up to, I think, 10 cords per household. And, you know, 10 cords, that's more than 10 pickup loads. Right. That's a lot of wood. As far as harvesting green trees on the Forest Service, all of the rules pertaining to how federal lands, timber sales proceed are still intact. They're still the same. We still have NEPA, Endangered Species Act, all of the planning processes. The emphasis on the restructuring of the Forest Service is to get more local connection with the Forest Service and surrounding communities so that they can move effective projects forward more quickly. But none of the rule there have been no rule changes with regard to policy of harvesting on federal lands.
And here's the problem, is that because of the length restrictions, is that it's a lot easier on a person's own property to be able to cut up the firewood. And with those length restrictions, it makes it much more difficult and much more costly to block it on down in the field. So I want to see that go away. I want to see that go away. I don't care what happens. But if a person wants to build a house, person builds a house. But it has to go away.
All right.
Well,
thanks
again,
for the call.
The length restriction doesn't apply to private land. You can do whatever you want to on your own land. This only applies to timber or to firewood cutting on federal lands. And again, depends where you are and what you're hauling, but hauling out logs longer than 6 feet makes them pretty heavy, pretty hard to move. I mean, I cut a lot of firewood myself. So, again, what you do on your private land is there are no restrictions. There's only two laws in Montana that pertain to private land harvesting, and that is the Streamside Management Zone rule that you cannot cut more than 50% of the trees within 50 feet of your stream. And, again, there's a little tighter rules on that. And that is to preserve cool water temperature to preserve our fisheries. And the other one is the fire hazard reduction law, that if you're doing any kind of harvesting on your land, you have to clean up your debris so that it won't support a flame length more than 4 feet on a bad fire day. And that's to aid in fire suppression activities. Other than that, you can do whatever you want to on your private lands.
All right. So the phone lines are open at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. We're coming up against a commercial break here in a little less than a minute, so it would be difficult to try to get a call in. But we have Dave from Butte waiting, Kevin and Ed, and a couple other phone lines open if you have a question or a comment for Dr. Peter Kolbe, forestry specialist with MSU Extension Forestry, or Sandy Perrin, who is the plant clinic coordinator here in Missoula and the Missoula County Department of Ecology and Extension. So we're learning a lot today. If you have a question or a comment, please feel free to give us a call. They'll be here for another 20 minutes or so, and we'd love to get you on and get your questions answered. Again, the number 406-721-1290, or you can call 1-800-568-5309. I want to say thank you to everybody for tuning in this morning for Talkback, for Dr. Kolb and Sandy Perrin sharing their expertise with all of us. So we'll continue with that when we come back from the break. And again, we appreciate all of you listening all across the state of Montana here on Talkback. We'll be right back after this timeout.
Thanks to generous community support, Wounded Warrior Project has helped post 9/11 veterans and their families since 2003. Through no-cost physical and mental health services, legislative advocacy, career assistance, and life skill training, we're there every step of the journey.
It's possible to feel understood,
to get support when it's needed most.
And now I know anything is possible.
And we're just getting started. Learn more at woundedwarriorproject.org/possible.
We're with Liam after his fourth military move, when being new is starting to get old. We're with all service members and their families. Are you with them? Learn more at USO.org today.
We are back on Talkback. 407-206-721-1290 is our number. I'm Peter Christian. Our guests here in studio, Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin. And folks have been waiting for a while to talk with you. Dave from Butte is on. Dave, good morning and welcome to Talkback, sir.
Yeah, how are we doing today?
Fine. What's up with you? What's your question?
So I have two questions. One is I have an Engelmann ivory that climbs my back fence. And about midsummer, it gets a little tiny bug in there. And if I spray it, it kills it. It kills the ivory. And I'm just using a Bug Be Gone by Ortho or something of that nature. And then the tarragona hedge, somewhere around August, gets a really milky color leaf. And then it will take the leaves off that tarragona early. Anything can be done about either of those questions.
So I'm assuming when you say an Engelmann ivy, are you referring to a Virginia creeper? It gets a leaf hopper, and usually the leaf hopper starts coming out real shortly after the leaves appear. It's a sucking insect, so it's sucking the chlorophyll out. Then your leaves turn discolored, and in the fall, they a lot of times will prematurely turn red and drop.
That is, you're exactly right.
Yeah, so spraying very shortly, right after leaves come out, when that's usually when the leaf hopper first comes out, you can use a lot of different products, pyrethrins, many different type of anything that ends in a THRIN product will work really well on those. Add a little insecticidal soap with them. But the key is to doing it early before they get too leafy and full. And with your carrageenan, it's probably called powdery mildew. It's a fungus. So one of the things is not to overhead water, to provide good air circulation for that hedge, which is kind of hard sometimes with hedges. So you may need to pre-apply a fungicide. But again, you're going to do that before you start to see that fungus appear. So if it starts in August, maybe in July, you're going to apply a fungicide, whether it's Immunox, sulfur, chlorothalonil, any of those products will work, but it has to be pre-applied. Diseases, a lot of times you cannot cure them once they have appeared.
And carrageenans don't really like to be watered that much. Overwatering them can actually be very detrimental to them. So it's a species that's well adapted to drought and hot, dry temperatures.
Okay.
Thank you for the call, sir. Let's get Frank from Evergreen. Frank, thanks for calling Talkback this morning. What's on your mind?
Hi, this is Frank from Evergreen. I wanted to talk about a natural way of changing the weather by communicating with the birds. Instead of whistling, just go outside and use owl language
and they'll understand.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Thanks. Thank you for the call, sir. Yeah, a little humor. All right. Kevin is standing by. Kevin, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Hi, Kevin. You're on TalkBack with Peter and Sandy. Go ahead.
Oh. Okay. I thought Frank was on. Okay. Anyway, the subject is I use triple 16 fertilizer in my lawn. And I also use it in my veggie garden, the granulars. Somebody told me I should not be doing that, but I've been having good yields. Is there a reason why I shouldn't be using the triple 16?
No, in the lawn situation, you know, lawn prefers just mostly nitrogen, so it doesn't need so much phosphorus and potassium. That's the only difference. But, you know, a lot of people use it in their gardens, but, you know, soil testing is always a great way to know where you're at with that, because the thing is nitrogen leaches a lot in our soils. Plants absorb it very highly, and a lot of times you can get up in an abundance of phosphorus and potassium, and it can be detrimental down the line if you continually do that. So a soil test is a great way to go to know exactly where you're at. Maybe you don't need all those other nutrients. Maybe you just need nitrogen.
Triple 16 is pretty hot in the range of fertilizers, so I tend to more recommend something like 10-10-10. It's not quite as much, and there's a thing called a half-life. So these types of things can build up in your soil, and at some point you might actually build too acidic a soil or some toxicity levels. So that I'd say that would be the only caution in using triple 16.
Okay, and where would I get a soil testing kit?
So a lot of extension offices do provide information on where you can send it off to. There isn't any local labs here in Western Montana. Most of them you do have to send off to like Midwest Labs, Advice Labs out of North Dakota. Oregon State has a lab. You know, a lot of Montana State does not have a soil testing lab for nutrient.
But most county extension offices will be able to help you send your soil out for testing.
Okay, thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you for the call, sir. We appreciate it. We have time to get one more. Let's get Ed. Good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Yes, we have waterfront property with an enormous Douglas fir on it leaning out over the shoreline. Well, it turns out this tree is 500 miles from here, and the water is salt water. Can a tree like that use via osmosis or something salt water in its a diet of water, or does it have to wait for it to rain?
No, it can't use salt water. Salt actually has a higher osmotic potential than the tree can extract water out of the soil with. More than likely it's surviving. You have a subsurface water flow that's coming from the landscape and going towards the shoreline, and that's what the tree is living off of. But a lot of times you'll see when people install septic systems or things like that where they break that water flow, that subsurface water flow, their trees will die when they're up next to salt water. So, because then you get salt water intrusion into the soil. So, yeah, to my knowledge, there is our native conifers cannot tolerate salt water at all.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. Thank you for the call, sir. We appreciate it. Yeah. By the way, Sandy and Dr. Cole will be here all the way till 10 o'clock this morning. So the phone lines are free right now. So if you have something going on in your yard and garden and you need some questions answered, please feel free to give us a call within the next 8 minutes or so at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Again, Dr. Peter Kolb is the forestry specialist with MSU Extension Forestry, and we have a lot of fun with Peter talking about what's going on with trees throughout the state of Montana. And Sandy Perrin is the plant clinic coordinator with the Missoula County Department of Ecology and Extension. So lots of expertise here to answer your questions. So give us a call. We'll be right back after this time out. You're on TalkBack.
Hi, this is John with Jason.
You've been diagnosed with COPD, but breathing is getting harder. Everyday activities take more effort, and life feels smaller. Is this you? If your COPD is getting worse, there are options to help you breathe easier. Learn more at isthisyoucopd.org.
Thanks for joining us on this Thursday edition of Talk Back. Coming into the final segments now with Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin. And let's go ahead and get John from the Flathead on, right? John, good morning. You're on Talk Back. What's on your mind, please?
Good morning. I like the information you're putting out. I have approximately a one-acre lot, suburban house, and small spots of thistle for a couple of years ago have now become too much. What's an efficient, cost-effective way to get rid of it?
So I'm going to guess that's probably Canada thistle. They're rhizomatous and they spread. If it's in a lawn area, then you want to use possibly a selective herbicide that allows your grass to grow but kills the thistles. Might be a product like a 2,4-D, dicamba type product. If it's in an area that you don't care to kill the lawn, possibly kill the grass, or it's not in a lawn, glyphosate would be the product to use.
And time of year is important, so you're going to be more effective spring in the fall, late summer, when the thistle is translocating that herbicide down to its root system, because right now it's on like 2,4-D will burn the tops off, but the root system will stay alive and it'll sprout back.
Yeah.
Okay, that's my problem. I think the roots have become dominant, and yeah. A 2,4-D product spring and fall?
They will do some now. I mean, it will make the plant suffer a little and weaken it because you're taking off the top growth. It can't photosynthesize, but you will have to reapply in the fall as well.
And it may take a couple of years. I mean, I fight thistles all the time. And so, yeah, multiple applications. I usually do two. So if you do it now, you might slow down the flowering and the seeding part of it. But then a late summer application is more effective in killing the root system.
And I'm guessing this is like a wide application with some diffuser mechanism. And I was thinking, is there anything you can specifically spray hot on to each thistle just to get it deep?
Well, again, you want to use a good surfactant if you're using just like a backpack or a portable sprayer. So that's like soap that breaks down the water tension of water droplets, so you get better absorption on the leaves. Just go and individually hit those, and it's pretty effective. You just, again, you can use something more powerful like Milestone, but those tend to have a stronger impact to other vegetation. So if you're trying to preserve some of your native forbs and things like that, late summer is effective because they're dormant and you're not going to affect those as much. You spray now, you're going to get all of your broadleafs with something like 2,4-D, and only the grasses will survive.
Thank you for your advice. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, sir. Let's get Rick on from Stevensville. Rick, good morning. You're on Talkback with Sandy and Dr. Kolb. Hello, Rick.
Okay. I didn't hear my name.
You're on, Rick. Answer. Go ahead.
You got a great playlist there. Is that yours?
Yes, we're it's coming out of my head, but yeah, just, go ahead.
Okay, so I heard Sandy talking about the coddling moths, and I have a tremendous problem with my apples, and they're infecting some of my pears. But I was wondering, I'm ready to go with the commercial grade stuff, and I'm wondering if she knows where I can purchase that kind of bug spray.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by commercial grade. You know, it's just, effective.
I've read the stuff where they, you know, you spray it like every 4 weeks with some kind of oil based thing, and then there's the other stuff that is more inclined to that's a kind of a preventative. But
no,
then there's stuff.
Everything has to be a contact spray with the coddling moth. So it's a little worm larva that hatch, and it has to be a contact spray. There are oil programs certainly out there, but they're usually, and that's in commercial orchards that are also mixed with a virus product, but it's hard to find that for local folks. You have to go to a commercial distributor. But all your other products, whether they're organic or inorganic, are effective, but you have to look at how long they're effective. Are they only good for 7 days? They need to be reapplied at 10 days. And then it's also good to rotate products. So use one product one time, another product the other time. The bug doesn't get used to that cocktail.
Okay. Is that something I can probably get at local feed stores?
Or hardware stores or garden centers, certainly.
Okay. All right. Okay. Nothing you recommend?
I mean, there's a lot of products. Pyrethrins, malathion, okay. Spinosad, neem. There's just a whole host. Again, we have a great moth guide that talks about backyard coddling moth. If you contact me at the office, I'd be happy to give you that sheet that tells you your respray intervals.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for the call. We got about a minute and a half left in our time together. So contact information, Sandy, for you at the plant clinic.
Yeah. So they can certainly reach me at 406-258-4213 or email me at sperrin@missoulacounty.us.
That's P-E-R-R-I-N, right?
Correct.
Got it. Okay. Dr. Kolb, how about you? Go ahead.
So email's the best, peter.kolb, K-O-L-B as in boy, at umontana.edu.
All right. Nick, please go ahead. What's coming up tomorrow, sir?
Yeah, we'll start with open phones for the first half hour, and then from 8:30 to 9, Michelle Binkley will join us. She's running for House District 85. And then from 9 to 10, it'll be Attorney General Austin Knutson on the phone.
All right. Again, thanks for all your calls, everybody. And a big thank you to Sandy Perrin and Dr. Peter Kolb. We appreciate all of your great advice and all of you folks calling in from throughout the state. Let's keep it up. We really appreciate each and every one of you when you call in to talk back. Have yourselves a great day. We'll see you tomorrow morning, bright and early at 8 o'clock for Talk Back.